1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. We welcome you. We're glad you're with us for another edition of Feltus and Kale. Dan, how are you today?
Well, good, Ken. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. Doing just fine as we head toward the Memorial Day weekend. Hard to believe, huh? Time flies when you're having fun.
Especially on Feltus and Kale. I mean, if you listen to this radio show, a lot of people just listen to it full stop all throughout the day.
I think so, yeah. They just play it over and over again. You can do that if you go to nhtalkradio.com. You can find all the great programming here on WKXL.
And also home of the Celtics, right? So we got another game tonight.
That is true. Game two of the best of seven series between the Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets. I thought the it was a winnable game for the Celtics. They led for quite a bit of that game on Saturday in game one of the series.
It was winnable. They I think they led at half, too.
They did.
They're up six or seven points at the half.
They could not seal the deal.
And could not. Hopefully tonight it'll be different.
Well, let us hope so. And throughout the series, but all the games right here with Grandy and Mac, Sean Grandy and the great Cedric Maxwell here on WKXL. And let's see how the Celtics fare against the big three of Kyrie, Kevin Durant, and James Harden. A formidable trio.
No doubt about that.
Yeah, for sure. And they haven't played that much, really, together. So, maybe that could work to the Celtics' advantage. But the Celtics have to be able to seal the deal. No Jaylen Brown, and it kind of puts them in a little hole right there. But at any rate.
In other sports news,
yes.
The Concord Crimson Tide girls softball team is on a roll.
All right.
They're 15-2. They're just lighting it up. They beat Keene yesterday. 8-1, I believe. Anyways, that's a great softball team. So in the Capital Region, if you're interested in catching a softball team, great softball, check out Concord's team. It's great. They got a lot of great players. It's a great community of people, too.
Could they be heading to a state championship?
You know, look, I don't want to jinx it.
Right.
I'm going to knock on some wood here, but I think it's a high possibility, Ken.
All right. That would be great to add to the long line of state championships for the Concord High Crimson Tide. Most recently, of course, the boys hockey team.
Yep.
With a state championship season under their longtime head coach, Duncan Walsh. I spent quite a bit of time last Friday night in downtown Concord. Had dinner, technically on the street, on Main Street downtown Concord, as they've cordoned off a lot of the areas around the restaurants for people to be able to enjoy outdoor dining. And Friday was a spectacular night.
It was beautiful.
To do that.
Yeah.
It really was. And things are really starting to open up. I drove by the Concord High School campus today and saw the students and some of the teachers walking around outside the building, and most of them not wearing masks. So things are really starting to open up.
Things are changing, no doubt about it. What did you eat Friday night when you went out to eat?
I had some Asian delicacies on Friday night. I won't mention the name of the restaurant because they don't advertise here, but it was a great, if they did, we certainly
would. Yeah,
right. And that goes for all the restaurants.
And they should.
And
they really should.
They really should if they knew, how to promote and how to market, but they'll learn over time. But no, it was a great place, and it was great food too, by the way. And just just being downtown, hearing the noises going, a lot of motorcycles out on Friday, so it was kind of noisy, but it was great. It was great to be out there, and it was so vibrant on Friday night. And I think the same was true most of the weekend as well in downtown Concord. But it's great to see, and you're seeing people even in some of the big box stores. I was in one of them the other day. And, it's about 50-50 now, because the one I was in, which was Walmart, they've opened it up. Customers are not mandated now to wear masks. Now, all of the employees had them.
Yeah.
But customers are no longer mandated to wear masks at some of the big box stores. I think in all of the grocery stores, customers are still mandated to wear masks, but not in some of the big box stores.
Well, certainly, you know, obviously tracking the CDC's recent mask guidance, yep, saying that basically vaccinated folks don't need to wear masks as a general proposition inside. You know, I think a lot of folks, I think you're going to continue to see, Ken, a lot of folks continue to wear masks, especially you never know what's going to happen, obviously, next winter. I think what we've seen both in New Hampshire and nationwide is incidence of flu and other types of diseases like that. Those cases are way down. Yeah. And in part based on the mask use and social distancing and other policies related to coronavirus has mitigated the healthcare impacts in other fields too. So I think you'll continue to see different folks do it. But for listeners out there, if there is a local business that does require masks, please comply. Don't make a big deal about it. They're doing what they think is right for them and their employees.
Right. No, exactly right. You know, just do as that particular establishment requires. Now, it's going to be interesting. Now, I have flown, flew to Florida on in March.
That's a long flight. Were your arms tired?
They really were. They really were. But I've recovered since. But, of course, at that time, that was March, middle to late March, that I went down for a short time. And everybody on the plane had masks, of course.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, tomorrow, tomorrow being Wednesday, I am going to be traveling on public transportation other than a plane for the first time in a while, because I'm going to take a train from Connecticut, from either New Haven or West Haven, whichever stop I decide to get on, and take it tomorrow night to Yankee Stadium.
Oh, wow.
To meet my daughter and her boyfriend for a Yankees-Toronto Blue Jays game.
Oh, great.
Tomorrow
That's
night.
Wonderful.
So, but what I'm interested in is to see how many, you know, if the mask mandate is still on. And, you know, frankly, I hope it is. I'm rooting for the fact that the public transportation requires you to still wear masks. I'm hoping that it will be a requirement. I will be prepared, but I'm just, you know, I just think, you know, we still should be on, you know, err on the side of caution, especially when you're as close to people as that in, you know, in a train, for example, or a subway or a bus or whatever mode of public transportation it may be. So I am hoping that the mask requirement is still in effect for those forms of transportation, which I will be on tomorrow, but when I return, I will give you a full and complete
report.
Look
forward to it.
Yes, I know. So anyway,
well, enjoy the trip.
Well, thank you. And I don't know what the capacity limits are right now at Yankee Stadium, but I do know that over the weekend I saw hockey and basketball games with arenas virtually filled to capacity, and some people in masks and other people not wearing masks. We will take a break. You are in tune with Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. 1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. It's Feldis and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Don't forget, the ice cream trail begins this weekend, folks. This weekend.
Very exciting. Very exciting. And Ken, if you wanted to get the scoop on the ice cream trail, how would you do it?
Well, you would go to NHDairyPromotion.com or look at the Granite State Dairy Promotion on Facebook, and they have a Twitter presence as well. So there are many places where you can do it. So check it out. And as a result of getting started this week, Amy Hall will not be joining us on the program this week, but we're going to have a very good pinch hitter, or designated hitter, if you want. I want to use that term for Amy Hall this week, and we'll keep that a mystery. But at any rate, we'll be looking forward to that. But right now, we'll be looking forward to our guest on this program, and it's Maggie Fogarty. Maggie is the co-director of the New Hampshire program for the American Friends Service Committee. And Maggie, how are you today?
Well, I'm fine, thanks. So, good to be with you. Good morning.
Well, it's great to be with you, Maggie. And first of all, before we talk about anything else, tell us what is, in fact, the American Friends Service Committee.
Well, AFSC is a Quaker-founded peace and justice organization that's been operating throughout the U.S. and throughout the world for 104 years. And we've been in New Hampshire for 45 years with an office in Concord right next to the State House.
Outstanding.
So we work on issues of economic justice and immigrant rights and racial justice. So it's a complex, intersected movement-building work that has us community organizing and doing public policy advocacy and coalition building.
And Maggie, you really just do amazing work, and it's been an honor and privilege to partner with you and work with you over the years, including when I was at New Hampshire Legal Assistance as a legal aid attorney, both on cases and also at the State House and also while serving in the State Senate. Maggie, we got this budget brewing at the State House, and it's received quite a bit of flack, including, I don't know, like 1,000 people signed up in opposition to it at the State Senate hearing or somewhere in that ballpark, registered opinions in opposition. Can you outline a little bit about your concerns about the state budget right now? What are some of the key points for listeners out there who may not be following as closely as you are?
Sure. Thank you very much, Dan. So our concerns about this year's budget actually are concerns that we've carried over multiple years in administration. So I just want to speak at a high level for a moment that as a state, we do not collect adequate revenue so that and fairly sourced revenue so that we can invest in the kinds of infrastructure, including human infrastructure, and programs that would really help our communities to thrive. And this year is definitely an acute manifestation of that kind of short-sightedness, a budget that includes many, many tax cuts and then consequent underfunding and even cuts to essential programs. We've seen a proposal in the Senate to partially restore some of the health and human services fundings, but it's outrageous that as we continue to try to recover from a pandemic that reveals inadequacy in our public health infrastructure, disproportionate impacts on essential workers and low-wage workers and community members of color, that we should be withdrawing resources from this sector. So, you know, it's problematic in so many ways, but as part of an effort to think beyond this current budget crisis, AFSC and several partners, faith partners and other activist organizations, have lifted up a people's budget for New Hampshire that imagines what would New Hampshire look like if our state budget's invested in affordable housing, in great wages for state workers, in excellent, high-quality, affordable college education and public education, no matter where you live. So we have a lot of work to do at the level of our collective imagination of what could a wealthy state, truly a wealthy state like New Hampshire, look like if we taxed people fairly and according to their abilities to pay and invested our collective wealth into the common good.
And 98.
And we're also particularly, if I can ramble for a second we're particularly alarmed at the presence in the budget of this language that would prohibit teaching about institutional racism and sexism. What a backwards, absurd proposal that would do real harm to our ability to meet this moment of racial justice that we are called to in the United States. So just another insulting piece of a budget that's inadequate in many ways.
And Maggie, I will tell you that probably 98% of the people listening to us right now will say we're taxed enough already in the state of New Hampshire.
Yes, we have a skewed tax system. A lot of people do suffer from our over-reliance on the property tax. a tax that goes up when we don't tax wealthy people and corporations sufficiently, a tax that goes up regardless of one's ability to pay it, a tax that is directly impacted by some of the cuts in state funding, say, to public education and other needs that then would have to be addressed at the municipal level. So I feel people's pain about the harmful impact of how we currently do taxation. But there are ways forward if we can be courageous enough to talk about who really should be paying more so that we can all live better.
Well, I certainly agree with both of you on this. Look, ordinary folks are paying their fair share. It's those at the top, the very wealthiest and big corporations that are not paying their fair share. And Maggie, as you know, in the last budget, we worked, a Democratic-controlled legislature closed loopholes for big out-of-state corporations. So companies like Netflix and Amazon actually started paying to New Hampshire. They obviously had business activity to New Hampshire and New Hampshire residents, especially during the pandemic. They started paying. You can look at the revenues right now. It worked. The revenues are up. And there's no reason to cut the state budget. What you should do is continue down the pathway of closing loopholes that impact and benefit those at the very top. And the opposite, Maggie, is happening up there. They want to get rid of the interest and dividends tax. You know, I don't know anybody gets corporate dividends. Ken, are you on a corporate board? You get a corporate dividends?
I do not get any corporate dividends. No. None.
Yes, that'd be a great question for all of us to ask our state legislators. Who's benefiting from these
right,
tax cuts?
Right.
Yeah.
So what are some of the tax law changes in addition to some we just talked about that are going on in this budget as proposed and that you disagree with, Maggie, and what are some of the things that you think should be considered?
Well, I defer to the extremely capable folks at the New Hampshire Fiscal Policy Institute for questions that get down in the weeds on the tax impacts. I will say that some of the tax cuts proposed will actually have an additional harmful impact of reducing what we might receive from some of the influx of federal dollars that
right.
we can anticipate through the rescue packages. But our message on taxation is much simpler, that are we taxing according to where the wealth is in this state?
Yeah. Yeah. So. And Maggie, what are some of the other issues? You touched on the ban on discussing systemic inequality and institutional racism and sexism. Can you talk a little bit more about that and also any other issue that you think that's in the budget that really shouldn't be in the budget?
Yeah. Yes. Well, this divisive concepts language, I'm using finger quotes here from my home, is, as I say, an absurd proposal. I think it's a fear-based proposal that if we create greater fluency and create a climate where we can reckon with the existence of not just the past harms, but the current existence of institutional racism and sexism in our society, then we might be moved to take actions that create more justice. And I know that can be unsettling. I know that these conversations take courage and take a certain amount of humility as we loosen our hold on some of our understandings about why the world is the way it is, but we this moment we're acknowledging 1 year anniversary since the murder of George Floyd.
Yep.
If we haven't moved collectively to greater courage and willingness to have these conversations and to face the truth of our society and how people are harmed by the violence of racism and sexism, then we're missing a moment here. So that absolutely has to come out, and we have to respond with courage there. But then we want to see investments in access to health care and disability supports and mental health care, reproductive health care. We have a full-blown housing affordability crisis in the state. You know it well, Dan, from long periods of time trying to help people to access affordable housing or to remain
yep.
in their housing. We're not going to get through that without investing in rental assistance and development dollars. New Hampshire could do so much more. Our neighbors in Maine invest so much more from the state coffers into the construction of housing that's affordable to lower-wage workers. and if we're ever going to address homelessness in a lasting way in this state, creating housing for people who may not have any or very minimal income. We have to feel responsible for them. We need to move the needle on college affordability in New Hampshire so that we don't lose our young people or saddle them with decades of debt that inhibit their possibilities and their career choices. So there's so much that we can do. We need to address the needs of people for mental health beds and the treatment of people right now in the secure psychiatric unit at the state prison. We need alternatives to incarceration. We need non-police responses to mental health and homelessness crises in our communities. And it doesn't just take money. It takes thoughtful strategies and plans, but they have to be backed by resources. And we'll see a tremendous payoff if we can muster the will to do that.
And Ken, based on Maggie's advocacy and advocacy of so many others, and Children Behavioral Health Collaborative, Disability Rights Center, et cetera, we put in the last budget a significant reform, a statewide mobile crisis team to prevent people from ending up in the emergency room waiting for mental health treatment. It wasn't stood up, and it was funded, fully funded. Wasn't stood up by this administration, the Sununu administration. How disappointing is it, Maggie, as an advocate and someone who's been working in the trenches to see, I'm certainly frustrated on my end, but as an advocate, the work that you've done, and you see the possibility, the opportunity, it basically right there at the fingertips of getting done, but then the administration pulling the rug out.
Yeah, well, it is demoralizing. And I think it's a sign, certainly it's a reminder that elections have consequences and that we need to grow our movement of people who are willing to give voice to their own experiences. We need to hear from people whose life experiences and perspectives often aren't consulted as these decisions are being made by our governor, by our legislature. And so it's a reminder that this work of movement building for economic justice in this case is as important as it's ever been.
So, you want to, tax, corporations more heavily. So who will be taxed? Who is specifically? What corporations do you want to see get a bigger tax bill, take a bigger chunk away from them? Who specifically do you want to see, get taxed here a lot more than they currently are?
Well, how about we just say no tax cuts, no tax cuts, no reduction to these interest and dividends taxes. We could impose a tax on capital gains. I mean, we know that we have extremely wealthy, I forget what the number is of millionaires who live in New Hampshire, but we could start with them and do quite well without putting anybody into an economic crisis. And I think when people see where that wealth can be applied toward the common good, that the case makes itself, and we'll talk less about taxes and more about public wealth and well-being.
Maggie, one of the other hot topics out there is affordable child care. Some amendments that were offered were rejected, unfortunately, by the Republican majority in terms of bolstering child care. And Governor Sununu has proposed and is in the budget cutting child care assistance to working class families. Can you talk about the importance of child care to families in this state, to them, their kids, and to our economy?
Yeah, thank you. Well, certainly you're a parent, Dan. I mean, you would understand the high value you would put on knowing that your children were in a safe, clean, well-run facility while you are away at work, that the teachers are well-compensated and well-trained and well-prepared. I mean, the idea that we can, quote-unquote, get people back to work simply by withdrawing some of the federal unemployment support without taking into account that people simply cannot afford to to place their children into high quality child care is just, it's really misguided public policy. It's cruel and it just does not take into account the real experiences of families and the love and care that parents have for their children and wanting to make sure that they thrive as well. So I just don't know why these stories of the impact of the lack of affordable child care aren't connecting more directly with our legislature. It could be that we need to construct a legislature that welcomes more parents. Unfortunately, the pay scale, et cetera, and the demands don't make it a workable avenue for so many parents who would bring that lived experience and that readiness to address this problem.
Well, you're right. As my wife Erin, reminded me, you know, in the legislature where I served for 6 years in the state Senate, 3 terms, it paid $100 a year. So it doesn't exactly attract
really
a lot of younger folks. We believe strongly in public service, and that's why we did it. But there's a lot of people out there that just are not able to do it, and young working families are not able to do it. And maybe that's reflective of why childcare hasn't necessarily surfaced to the top as something to be protected at a minimum in this budget. It's certainly not being protected. It's being slashed.
Right, right. Whose stories are being taken into account? I mean, if I look at the way, at the decisions that are being made in our budgets, I think, well, you know, wealthy business owners are being listened to. You know, people whose immediate concerns aren't necessarily raising young children or getting their children through public school or helping their young adult children to get through college. I think those experiences do not seem to be what's at the front of the mind of those who are deciding where our investments are. And we have to change that through varieties of ways, organizing, electoral politics, all manner of ways. The traditional ways of advocacy in this, thankfully, much more accessible legislative session where our elected officials have been able to hear directly from people without them having to go to Concord during a work day and wait many hours to be heard. So I do hope we can preserve some of those mechanisms, because it is one important way of how we carry these stories to the places where the decisions are made.
Yeah, certainly grateful for all the folks and for speaking up about issues that matter to them, their families, our communities. And as you mentioned, Maggie, the opportunity to testify by Zoom has made it more accessible for more people. And it's certainly a way to get involved. And speaking of involvement, you're involved in so many things, Maggie. And I can't let you off the hook, Maggie, without telling Ken about how Maggie was, you know what I'm going to talk about.
You already know this story, Maggie, huh?
Maggie.
It's always there, off to the side.
That's right. It's right there. It's right there. But we, Maggie and I, as Maggie mentioned, we did a lot of work together, including on housing affordability. And at one point, there was a significant bed bugs problem throughout New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So we worked on those issues together. And in fact, in one of the cases that I had involving bed bugs in an infested building representing the tenants, Maggie was one of our witnesses, our star witness.
Were you a victim of bed bugs, Maggie?
No, but I was accompanying a number of tenants in some of the rental housing in various New Hampshire communities who were really suffering. And we were working with, you know, very conscientious landlords as well, who sincerely trying to find a solution. So, yeah, and so Dan was helping to defend a tenant who had been suffering with a bed bug infestation and trying to make sure that their rights were protected in the courts.
So how is that situation now? Has that been taken care of? Is the bed bug issue not as much of a problem as it once was?
It isn't as overwhelming. I think through what's called integrated pest management, there's been a lot of appropriate, safe, healthy strategies implemented. I think landlords and hotels and people who, help to place people in rental housing are just a lot savvier about some of the steps to take. I don't mean that it's not a problem at all, but it certainly isn't flattening people the way it was there for quite a while. So,
and I think, some credit to to Maggie and others who worked so hard on it, and you know, working in a collaborative way with landlords, property owners, hotel managers, etc. We passed legislation on it, blah, blah, blah. There was a lot of work that went into it. But you're right, it's not gone, but it's certainly not even close to what it used to be.
That's right. And people know what to do and to go sooner rather than later in the response and not try to deny it. And, you know, yeah, we've learned a lot along the way. I remember we helped host with our partners at the Granite State Organizing Project and several other organizations. We hosted a statewide conference, New Hampshire Bites Back, so that we could help different stakeholder groups, including like home visitors and others who were impacted by this, to just know what steps they could take. So.
Yeah. As long as it's not New Hampshire Bites Backs, you know, that's...
that's right.
Yeah. Who knows? Yeah.
Right.
Maybe that's next.
You don't want that to happen. Maggie Fogarty is our guest here on Feldes and Kale. We have to take a quick break. Hold on just a second, Maggie. We'll be right back with you here on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldes and Kale, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back. Our guest today is Maggie Fogarty. Maggie is the co-director of the New Hampshire program for the American Friends Service Committee. We've been talking about the New Hampshire People's Budget. And if there's any aspect of that, Maggie, that we missed, what are some of the other points that you would like to bring up concerning that New Hampshire People's Budget?
Sure. I think I want to lift up that our state workers deserve a fair contract at good wages and with excellent benefits. And, you know, I was sad to learn that a certain number of our state workforce isn't even earning a $15 an hour wage. So part of our people's budget is to show our state workers that we honor and value their service with living wages, good benefits, et cetera. And we also talk about the need for investments in Black, Indigenous, and people of color communities, recognizing that they are the most impacted by injustice, and we have to right the wrongs that have been done and make amends for the ongoing impacts of systemic racism. So those are core points. I want to name that our partners in creating this budget include the New Hampshire Poor People's Campaign, the Granite State Organizing Project, 350 New Hampshire, several faith partners, Unitarian Universalists, the New Hampshire Council of Churches, the Episcopal Church of New Hampshire. So all people who know that this effort to create a budget that is good for all New Hampshire communities has to have the long view, that there are fights we have to take up in this legislature, this week, next week, et cetera, but that we have to be pointing further down the road to, you know, what would this state look like if we truly valued all of our community members, our environment, our roads and bridges, our future, our young people, our elders and our children, and worked together to make sure that everyone can thrive.
So there is something in there for old people like me too, right?
Absolutely. Oh, okay. Absolutely. We want to help people to stay in their homes and in their communities if that's what we want. We want to help their adult children with caregiver supports so that families have choices. We want our nursing care facilities to be wonderful places so that when those are needed, they are an appealing option for people. We want to help people with navigators so that the complex systems of healthcare access are not overwhelming and don't trap people in confusion or put them at risk for exploitation. So, yes, we care about our elders, too. Nobody gets left behind if we do this right.
And, Maggie, speaking of one of the many issues that we just talked about in terms of leaving nobody behind to move New Hampshire forward, affordable housing, last budget, Democratic-controlled legislature did the first ever ongoing annual appropriation to the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. What is the status of that? Is there any effort to bolster that? Even though we accomplished that and there was bipartisan support then, it isn't and it's the first time it's ever been done, it's still not to the level as an annual support that our neighbors are doing. Is there any effort to bolster that in this legislative cycle?
Yes, and I want to credit the great leadership of Housing Action New Hampshire for making steady progress to further capitalize the Affordable Housing Trust Fund.
Mm-hmm.
I know that they've also had some recent good news from the Senate Finance Committee with some restoration of some homeless service dollars. But we'll need more organizers in this area as well. The Great Estate Organizing Project and the Manchester Housing Alliance and others are lifting up that we need a whole lot more in terms of rental assistance. If people, when the eviction moratorium is lifted, if people are going to be able to stay in their homes and not have the catastrophic consequence of eviction, which, you know, as costs shoot up in this super hot housing market, will, you know, is harder and harder for people to resolve. We've had some issues with the federal dollars actually getting efficiently to those who most need it. And so these partners are working hard to help those dollars get to where they need to go. But we've got to be building out more housing that's affordable to people at all income levels. And that is going to take more investments. Could we get up to $50 million a year per budget, for example? Is that unheard of, or can we see that how that would pay back for all of us?
Right. And Maggie, for folks who are listening to this discussion and want to get in touch with you and the great work that you do, how would they get in touch with you? And what's your website, that kind of thing?
Sure. Our website is afsc.org/NH, and anyone can email us anytime at afscnh@afsc.org. We also encourage folks to subscribe to our weekly State House Watch newsletter. It goes out every Friday between January and June, where we try to keep track of the goings-on at the State House, and unsurprisingly paying lots of attention right now to the state budget negotiations.
Maggie, it's been a pleasure to have you with us. And Maggie Fogarty, the co-director of the New Hampshire Program for the American Friends Service Committee. Maggie, thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Maggie.
Thank you both. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Maggie Fogarty. We are Feldis and Kale coming to you on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Heading down the home stretch, it's Feldis and Kale. We welcome you back. We are presented here on 103.9, 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. We do have the ice cream trail officially beginning Friday.
Wow.
How about that?
That's great. I can't wait. I've been practicing my ice cream eating skills in advance of the ice cream trail coming out.
You had better, because there are 42 stops along the way.
That's a lot of ice cream.
In New Hampshire, a lot of ice cream, for sure. You know, but if you make that your main meal of the day, then it's okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
I'm not a dietitian, but it sounds about right.
It's all right, you know. So, you know, get her done, and there are some great prizes if you do. I mean,
there'll be a drawing right here.
That's right. This is the official place for the drawing for the ice cream trail, but that's not going to come until September or October. So a lot of time to eat ice cream between Memorial Day weekend and, let's say, you know, generally speaking, Labor Day weekend. So plenty of time to get out there and
do all 42 stops.
And the important thing is, not only will you get some great ice cream along the way, it's also a great way to navigate New Hampshire. And I like that slogan, don't you? Navigate New Hampshire. That just came to me. But there are so many things to see and do. You know, in one of the jobs I'm doing now, I get to see, and I've lived in this area between Manchester and Concord now for the better part of 40 years. And, you know, I'm still finding places, even in Concord and Loudoun and
yep.
Canterbury and Chichester and Penacook, places that I never knew existed.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's amazing. And some of them are fantastic, and, you know, some of them not so great, but you get to see a lot of places. And the important thing with the ice cream trail is you are supporting your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. That's really the bottom line.
Absolutely. Supporting, 92 or 94 dairy farms, I think, in that ballpark.
Yep.
And they're local businesses. They do follow best practices. You'd be supporting your local economy.
That's
and,
right.
And get some good ice cream along the way and get to enjoy New Hampshire.
Yeah, very true. And in another program we're going to have this week, we're going to have the Commissioner of Agriculture on the show, Sean Jasper.
That's true.
Yeah, so we'll be looking forward to getting his take on the overall state of agriculture in this state of New Hampshire. And Sean, by the way, the seventh Commissioner of Ag for the state. It's the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. So it encompasses a lot of different things. It really and truly does. So we look forward to our visit with Sean Jasper later on this week. So that'll be good. The only thing that is negative as far as traversing the state of New Hampshire or navigating New Hampshire are the gas prices. I heard today that the national, and I know it's less than this in New Hampshire, but the national average for a gallon of gas right now is $3.04. That's the national average.
Well, hey, I just want to say it spikes around Memorial Day, and especially now. I mean, people are, we talked about it at the onset of the program, people are getting out, they're active, once there's increased demand, usually there's increased prices, and it's a summer driving season, and I suspect, Ken, that there's going to be a lot of activity this summer. I mean, people have been, bottled up for quite some time, so I think that will add some pressure to those prices.
Well, it's 304 nationally in New Hampshire. I'm not exactly sure what it is. I filled up yesterday, and it was 275 a gallon where I filled up. So a year ago to this date, the average national price for a gallon of gas was $1.96. So we're talking about $1.08 more per gallon. So when you figure, it's pretty much $15 extra every fill up.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that there is still some shutdowns about this time last year, and people weren't really driving, a lot of decreased economic activity. So increased demand for gas results in prices going up. So I think what you're seeing is pretty natural for Memorial Day, going into Memorial Day. And, I think it's, people should, if you're listening, fill up now before it goes up even higher.
That's good advice. That's good advice. And I'm going to fill up before I head south to Connecticut because it's more expensive down there, folks. It really is. And in California, just be glad you're not in California. $4.14 per gallon in California right now.
Wow.
So, I mean, $2.75 is bad enough, but $4.14 obviously is even worse. Certainly right now, $2.75 a gallon in New Hampshire is enough. It's going to go up. It will go up. There's no doubt about that. It's going to go up before it comes down, that's for sure. But I remember a number of years ago, back in the late 2000s, the early 2000s, like 2012, around there, we had gas in New Hampshire that was over $4 a gallon.
It certainly has fluctuated over the years, no doubt about that. And speaking of other pocketbook issues we just talked about, but the state budget, certainly that's going to affect folks, everybody. It's the only piece of legislation, Ken, that affects everybody in the state, the state budget, and it's your budget. So we had a discussion about it with Maggie Fogarty, but folks who are interested in providing input, go to the General Court website, New Hampshire Senate, just Google it and provide input to the Senate Finance Committee and to the Senate. The budget's in the Senate now. Provide your input on things that matter to you and your family and your community. It's really important that you do so, and this is your budget, so it should reflect your values and your needs.
Oh, absolutely so. Well stated, and of course, budget is passed in the House. It's in the hands of the Senate right now, and then they'll work on it some more. So it's still a process very much in that is active at this point. So as Dan said, make your feelings known to your local senators and representatives. That'll do it for this edition of Feldis and Kale. Thanks for listening. We are presented proudly by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.